In fact, I own all three seasons of Star Trek, the original series, on HD DVD. Mm-hmm. Because I backed the wrong pony in that fight.
That's always rough, seeing the HD DVDs at the Goodwill when I go to look for Blu-rays.
Such a wonderful fucking format.
The network children ask for by name. The Defenestrate Media Network.
What happens when mixtapes meet memes? This is Gen Zex. Join J.M. Bell and Braxton Bunnell as they break down the news, music, movies, trends, and moments that shape Gen X and the world Gen Z is creating right now. We're judging the worlds that raised us, from landlines to smartphones. This is Gen Zex. The culture that was versus the culture that's trending.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys, girls, they, thems, welcome to Gen Zex, the only podcast where Gen Z teaches vibes, Gen X teaches survival, and somehow neither one of us can fix the printer.
That, yeah. I got into a fight with the work printer the other day, and just replaying that scene from Office Space.
Oh,
in my
God, yes. Yeah. Yes. I did that to a fax machine.
Oh, yeah.
Before I ever saw that movie, it was just the worst fax machine of all time. And I had enough. I was working at a coffee shop in a mall in Denver. And I just called corporate and was like, hey, fax machine, it died. And they're like, what happened? I'm like, I don't know. Sparks, smoke. Whatever. I'm like, I'm gonna need another one to do my reports. And they're like, okay, fine, we'll get it. And I'm like, all right. And I took the fax machine out to the dumpster. It was a big walk-in dumpster, and I just threw that thing in there as hard as I could, and it burst into about 1,000 pieces. Boom. And I have felt zen in my life. I have several times in my life have I felt at peace with the universe, but never as quickly or as completely as that moment when I just destroyed that fucking infernal machine.
There is something to the calm that you feel after just absolute havoc on an inanimate object that's mm-hmm. been making your life hell.
Yep.
Yeah, when you can finally throw away the electronic that's just hasn't worked since day one, but it's necessary and you need to use it every day.
Yeah.
And you can just smash it. It feels so good.
It does feel good. Feels very nice. So, hey, buddy. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
That was my attempt. I'm gonna try a few of these out as we go over the next few weeks to open the show in a way that feels as polished as the shows I've been doing for 15 years.
That's fair. I liked it. I thought that was good.
That was pretty good. And because, I have a printer right here that I love. I've had it for years, and I'm still on the original toner cartridge. But it's wireless, and I cannot figure out how to reset the fucking wireless on it. I've gone to the internet. I have asked the Googles. I've gone to Canon's fucking webpage. Everything. Cannot get the thing to reset the Wi-Fi. So it is a wired machine.
The one we have at work, it's one of those EcoTank ones.
Yeah.
That when it's connected to the computers, it works fine.
Yeah.
For some reason, I don't know if it was a software update that caused it or what, but it created an entirely separate printer device setting on the computer for printing over wireless.
Okay.
And I couldn't figure out why it wasn't printing when I needed to print some very necessary stuff that needed to be done right now.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
Fought with it for about an hour before I figured out that it just made a new one, and I had to go into the printer app and set it as a clickable option.
I love it.
For no reason did they have to do that.
None at all. I did my bad week, you know, when I remove all of the heavy stuff with, you know, Tiffany being sick and all of that, was I have this insanely cool Samson swing arm for my microphone. I've had this thing for years, but the problem is that the original mount was made of soft metal and it broke. So I found my JB Weld the other night and performed an emergency surgery on this thing. Now, I was teaching this weekend, so we recorded the shows out of order and out of time. So Saturday night, we're doing the comic book show, and I've got my new... It was fancy. I'm like, I finally fixed this fucking thing. I'm so happy about it. And then slowly, after about a half an hour into the show, my mic just gets go lower and lower and lower and lower. And I pick it up, and it goes lower and lower and lower. And right, yeah, the JB Weld did not work. Absolutely failed me. It broke right in the same goddamn place. You know, so that's fun. Well, look, we're 5 minutes into talking about fixing printers.
This is a printer picks and printer show.
No wonder NPR lost their funding. So let me take you back to the week of June 4th, 1982. Israel intensified its military activity in southern Lebanon with intense censorship limiting news reports on the ground action.
Man.
1982, sir. 1982.
I always say that time is a flat circle, and I'm never proved wrong.
No.
Every day.
No,
every day I am vindicated.
I agree with you on that one. British forces are poised for the final assault on the Argentine garrison at Stanley in the Falklands War. Reagan was touring Europe, meeting with French President Mitterrand in Paris. Visiting Normandy for the 38th anniversary of D-Day. 38th. Jesus Christ, jeez. I'm old. President Reagan's 1983 fiscal year budget proposal, including a $122 billion deficit. That's it? Fucking amateur. faced intense scrutiny and low support in the House. New York City, Mayor Koch ordered a hiring freeze across all city agencies. Significant flooding in southern New England, particularly Connecticut, over the weekend of the 4th through the 7th, with up to 16 inches of rain. In Los Angeles, an investigation continued into a California facility regarding improper disposal of hundreds of aborted fetuses.
All right. If you had handed me a bingo card of all the stuff you were going to talk about for this.
Oh yeah.
I would have said that was like a red herring.
I'll be honest with you. I hadn't read the end of that sentence by the time I got to it. I was just as startled as everybody else.
Okay. Yeah. That was just as shocking for you. I'm glad we all got that jump scare together.
Yeah. I didn't write this. I just went online and was like, what was in the news the week of June 4th?
No, that's fair.
Yeah. Poltergeist. Supernatural horror film Poltergeist, produced by Steven Spielberg, directed by Toby Hooper, was released in theaters, as well as Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, released in theaters. That's my touchstone moment. I was 10 years old. I was 10 years old. I had just discovered Star Trek in syndication. I had not seen the Star Trek, the motion picture. I would not see that for many, many years. So my first Star Trek movie was Wrath of Khan. And I had not yet seen the episode in which Khan premieres. So I had no fucking idea what was going on in this movie. All I knew was that I was enjoying the hell out of myself.
You and I were in the same boat with me watching this movie.
Well, So there's an episode of the original series, I believe, called Space Seed, where they find Khan and all of his people afloat. They'd been shot into space and cryogenically frozen to get them off the planet Earth because they were all genetically modified. So they were superhumans, super smart, super strong, whatever. And Khan decides he's going to take over the Enterprise, and hijinks ensue. And then, you know, Kirk wins and sends him down to Set the Alpha 5. Did you think this was Set the Alpha 6?
I loved his accent. It was, I thought it was just so delightful and so fun.
Oh, yeah. He was having a fucking ball.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'm honest, Wrath of Khan is what happens when Captain Kirk realizes he's not the youngest guy in the room anymore. You know, and Khan Noonien Singh decides to respond by going absolutely Shakespearean drama king. This is a kid who accidentally took both of his Adderall before he went off to Shakespeare camp. And I love it. I love it. But the thing is that, you know, it is talked about in Trek circles with such reverence. And honestly, to me, looking back and watching it just 2 days ago now, because, of course, I use that as an excuse to watch it. I'm like, honey, I gotta watch the Star Trek too. I gotta. How come? For the show, babe. I gotta do it for the show.
It's homework. I gotta do my homework.
And she's like, so Braxton picked Wrath of Khan? I was like, oh no, that was mine. No, that was all me. She's like, did you really need to watch? Because I threw it on in the bedroom and dozed off a little bit. Took kind of a little half nap. And was just listening to the movie and playing it in my head as though I were on a bigger screen than what hangs in my bedroom, you know? So I'm just half asleep and enjoying the shit out of this movie. Meanwhile, she thinks I'm all the way asleep and have abandoned her to Ricardo Montalban chewing on scenery, you know? And I'm just in my pleasant little place. And she's like, you know, you left me alone with it. I'm like, no. I watched it. And then when I was really tired, I turned it off. And she's like, I remember that. I'm like, great. She's like, what'd you do? I'm like, oh, the next morning I just started it over in the office. Watched the whole goddamn thing again. Because there's an emotional connection that I have to this movie that I still don't understand. You know, it was the first movie I ever cried. I think I was 8.5 or 9, and it was E.T. the Extraterrestrial. Broke my fucking little kid heart.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I felt the same way when I saw it the first time.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful movie. The second time I cried in a movie was when Kirk comes storming across the engineering bay, and Bones grabs him on one side. You'll flood the whole compartment. And Scotty gets him by the other and just says, he's dead already, man. Mm-hmm. And it just hits you. It's like, fucking Spock is going to die. Mm-hmm. And I had just fallen in love with this show. And so it made me cry. And that continued for years to the point that Kyla, my daughter, makes a joke about the first time she saw me cry was at Star Trek Into Darkness during that horrible con thing they made Spock do, because I was thinking about the one from Wrath of Khan. Yeah, I was replaying the memory and I got the sniffles. And she's like, are you shitting me? I'm like, shut up, leave me alone. Let your dad feel. So yeah, it's a core memory for me. You know, it is still to this day, and I have said this 1,000 times, my favorite Star Trek movie is always going to be Star Trek V. You know, and it is because I'm the kind of person that likes to give credit to what could have been. But since Star Trek V is what could have been, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, is what was. And it worked. Yeah. It worked so well. All these different storylines left over from a fucking series that nobody was paying attention to at the time, except for the guy they ended up hiring, you know, to write the screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jack B. Sowards, Harv Bennett. Harv Bennett. And then, of course, Gene Roddenberry gets a writing credit, but I have a feeling he had very little to do with it. you know? But yeah, Harv Bennett would become the Star Trek name for a while.
That's, I guess, okay, yeah. Because I guess my connection to Star Trek is a little looser. Like, I love Star Trek. I love it. More than I love Star Wars.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, you know, this water's wet.
I defined it down as Star Trek is my tribe, mm-hmm. you know, and I like it for its depth. I like it for its value. I like it for its optimism for the future of the human race. And I like Star Wars because it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially like the sequels. Like you could, and when I say sequels, I'm talking, or I guess the original trilogy, not the sequels. The original trilogy is just fun, but Star Trek, because I really like hard sci-fi.
Yeah.
Like super scientific, trying to be accurate. I don't get me wrong. I really enjoy like kind of loosey goosey. It's the future. We don't know sci-fi. But I really like when sci-fi tries to explain itself.
Yes.
And justify this world existing. And Star Trek, you know, has done that amazingly forever. But that being said, my introduction and pretty much my only exposure to Star Trek for a long time was Next Generation.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And so I love Generation. Like Picard will always be my captain. And then I, you know, went back and watched, I don't think I've seen all of the original series. I've seen a lot of it kind of here and there and kind of out of order. And then I had never really sat down and watched the movies. So watching Wrath of Khan, I very much was like, I don't know who Khan is. This dude seems really important for some reason. I went online and looked it up and I was like, oh, he was in one episode. Cool.
It was a serious episode. Kirk almost lost his ship.
Oh yeah, no, I'm not discrediting
to fucking Mr.
Khan as a threat
from Fantasy Island. Smiles, no, everyone, smiles.
But no, it's just this was such a jump for me away from Next Generation. But I really enjoyed it. I mean, I love Star Trek because it's Star Trek.
Yeah.
You could put a pile of slop in front of me with a Star Trek label on it, and I would probably enjoy it.
Yeah, I'd probably start looking for shelf space.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, ooh, the thing that killed Tasha Yar. A pile of slop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I started watching Star Trek on accident. Mm-hmm. It was a Saturday. I'd been out doing yard work with my dad. He finally got sick of how awful I was at it and cut me loose. He's like, go watch TV. I'm like, okay. No, I was terrible. And not on purpose. Now I am amazing at yard work because of the lessons I learned from a very frustrated, angry father. But yeah, he sent me in to watch TV, and then about a half an hour later he came in and I was kind of flipping between the four fucking channels we got and came across channel 20, which was on the UHF, and Star Trek was playing in syndication, and I went to change the channel. My dad's like, why don't you watch this? You like space stuff. And I was like, okay. So I sat down and watched, I believe it was The Trouble with Tribbles.
Oh, okay.
And I think that's what my brain says it was. And they were playing them in syndication out of order, you know? So I had no idea the continuity until I was well into the internet age. Mm-hmm. And could sit and watch them on DVD in order. In fact, I own all three seasons of Star Trek, the original series, on HD DVD.
Mm-hmm.
Because I backed the wrong pony in that fight.
That's always rough, seeing the HD DVDs at the Goodwill when I go to look for Blu-rays.
Such a wonderful fucking format. I went up to Sundance in 2008 for NPR and ended up hitting all these different hospitality houses. And Microsoft at the time was really, really pounding on HD DVD. Mm-hmm. You know, it was coming and it was the future and Blu-ray was bullshit. You know, and they're like, you remember how Betamax and the problem with Betamax versus VHS? And I'm like, yes, I am that old. And they're like, good, this is going to work. It's going to be, and I swear to God, this fucker said it, this is going to be like if Betamax won. Now, I'm a video editor. Betamax is the superior fucking format. But you couldn't do long play recording on it, so you only got 2 hours per tape. And the tapes were pretty expensive. And VHS, the tapes were cheaper, and you could do up to 6 hours on them if you had the right fucking deck. You know? And so... I have gone off on a wild tangent, and I have no idea how to rein myself back in. So, anyway, Star Trek. I ended up watching it on accident, falling in love with it, you know, and it, when my folks split and Dad and I moved down south and I was brand new in town, didn't have any friends, really didn't know what was going on. I joined a Star Trek fan club, the area, and these glorious people, these wonderful, wonderful individuals, they structure their fan base, at least they did at the time, in when you were brand new, you were a shuttle. You were a shuttle crew. And so, and I can't remember the name of it, but the group of people that were meeting together up in Pleasant Grove, Utah, they had a shuttle. It had a name. It had a captain. You know,
so awesome.
And I dragged my poor little brother. It was right when The Cage, the unaired pilot, came out on VHS, and everybody got together at somebody's house up in Cedar Fort, and you know, we all got in there with a whole bunch of strangers. There's about 30 of us in this basement and watched, you know, that first pilot, the unaired pilot, The Cage. And I was smitten. I was smitten with the culture, the people. It was one dork after another. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was some serious 80s geekdom going on. You, Revenge of the Nerds was the cool kids compared to these fuckers that were running around in this little shuttle, you know, that they ended up building into a huge spaceship full of people. They ended up having to move down to Provo because nobody up in our area could fit as many people as they had in their little fan group. And I didn't stick with it very long because my hair grew out and I hit puberty. But, you know, girls were, even though girls were a lot more interesting, I still, on the sly, watched Star Trek. And when Next Generation came out, I wasn't one of those guys that was like, well, it's not fucking Kirk, who cares? I was just like, yay, more spaceships.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, that's always been kind of my, like, attachment to it, is like, I love Picard, I love Kirk. I'm just happy that we're telling more stories in space.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of, you love hard sci-fi. What do you think of The Expanse?
I read the book forever ago.
Yeah.
And I remember really liking it. I still have not watched the show.
Oh, you're in for a good one.
Okay.
It is wonderful.
I'll give it a watch.
It is. It is hard sci-fi.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got to finish Snowfall. I'm almost done. I've got like one season left.
Snowfall. You told me about this.
Yeah. It's the one about the rise of the crack epidemic.
Oh, that's right. That's right. 1980s
South Central LA.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing show. So I really loved Breaking Bad. I thought it was a great show. I think this show is so much better.
Oh, wow. That's saying something.
I think that Snowfall is very, like, it is so, I've literally heard nobody talk about it. I found out about it off like a stray TikTok.
Okay.
Of one of the, like, a scene from one of the main characters.
I love coming across a show like that in the wild. It makes me feel bad for the show itself. Like, I don't know if you remember, AMC had Halt and Catch Fire a couple years back.
I remember hearing about it, but I never watched it.
Espionage.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, I mean, it was wonderful, wonderful fucking thing. But yeah, The Expanse is good painfully hard sci-fi, mm-hmm. in that it takes them for fucking ever to get from one place to another. The space fights are all really spread out. And so you launch a missile and you got like 2 hours before you know whether or not it hits your target. That kind of sci-fi.
That's so awesome.
It really is. It plays very, very well. But no, I got a hard time with Picard because he's not my guy. Mm-hmm. You know, Shatner's always going to be my guy. And I felt that way until Picard season 3, to be honest. I mean, I love Picard. I love Patrick Stewart. I dig seasons 3 till the end of Next Generation. <'Cause>, let's be honest, season 1 was a turd.
It's rough. Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ. They got fucking McCoy. Are you shitting me? Like DeForest Kelly needs to be rolled out and humiliated one more time before he dies. And they put old age makeup on him. He was 90.
Yeah. Dance for the network, monkey. Yep. Let's go.
All right. What do we got? I got, I got some notes. At its core, this movie is about aging, regret, and consequences. If we're being more accurate, it's about what happens when you forget to double check that the genetically engineered superhuman you exiled to a desert planet is still doing okay after 15 years.
Yeah, I really liked all this stuff with Picard kind of reckoning with being older.
Yeah.
I loved that everyone was like, what are you doing in an admiral position? Like, get out of there.
Yeah.
You should be on a ship.
It's very silly.
Yeah. Stop kidding yourself.
Well, and I like that. I like that when they do that with Kirk too, it's part of his lore is, mm-hmm. you know, at the end of, what was it? When they get back from Vulcan after saving the whales. Mm-hmm. And he's like, we're just going to make you a captain because you're pretty good at it. You're pretty shit admiral, James. You know, yeah. every time we give you a desk to fly, you end up on a spaceship saving the universe. So let's just leave you on the spaceship.
Just keep gravitating towards these ships.
Yeah. Quit hurting Will Decker's feelings, even though it turned out that he was a weird, creepy pedophile. I don't know if you knew that or not, but the guy who played Decker in Star Trek The Motion Picture, turns out he was a kiddie diddler.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. Ruined that movie for me. But in my defense, he also played the pastor father on a show called Seventh Heaven, mm-hmm. that all the Christian fundamentalists fucking loved for years. And it's like, no, why are you guys surprised when this happens to your people? They do it all the time. What do we got? Anything else? Oh, Khan Noonien Sung isn't just mad. He's theatrically mad. The man quotes Moby Dick like he's auditioning for community theater, except instead of chasing a whale, he's chasing one tired Starfleet captain who forgot his fucking name. Kirk versus Khan, battle of an overdramatic men. The movie is basically two guys refusing to text each other.
It was, yeah. It was every scene that they were in together, I always felt like they had this kind of standing bet of who can act louder than the other.
Well, I mean, you know, they didn't actually... At no point did they even interact with one another on that movie. Mm-hmm. You know, it was all, they were all just delivering lines to a green screen.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they did not act off each other, with each other. That was all Nick Meyer fixing that in the edits.
That's an amazing fix.
Yeah, because they didn't spend any, what was it? It's, Nicholas Meyer. Of course it was Nicholas Meyer. So yeah, no. If you take a step back and you look at it, you're like, oh yeah, I totally see how that works. Mm-hmm. They could film this guy over here 2 months ago, and they could film all these right here, and all you're doing is just, you know, acting off somebody that's doing a stand-in. So yeah, for all that, incredible movie.
Oh yeah, it was fantastic. I loved it. I mean, I watched it last night after I got it was a free comic book day yesterday. Ugh. Got home, long day, ordered myself some Jack in the Box, and turned on Star Trek. And there was just like this, like, and it's one of these things I've always loved about Star Trek is just this, there's this feeling of just comfort watching the show or the movies. Yeah. There's just, and it's the, it's something that I've just never gotten from like Star Wars. Is I, every time, like, I turn on the Star Trek and I, the characters come on, you know, the credits roll, theme song plays. It's just like, it's like a warm bowl of soup on a cold day.
Aww.
It just, it feels so welcoming.
Yeah, it's comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that comfort throughout, including Enterprise with its shitty theme song.
Mm.
You know, that's what skip intro is for.
Yeah, I mean, for the longest time, the only way I could go to sleep was if I pulled up a YouTube video of, it was like a 24-hour of just the engine noise.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like the background engine noise from a Star Trek episode.
I'll tell you a secret. For about four straight years, every episode of The Left Show had deep in the background the engine noise of the 1701.
Oh, okay.
And you can hear, if you really, really listen, because I had it potted way the fuck down, you can hear all the little bleep, bloop, bleep, blop, mm-hmm. wee-wee-wee-wee-woos, all just down in the bottom. And what it was a theory that I had read in, I think it was Scientific American, about how some forms of entertainment, like radio, when you have a talk radio going, but you have a music track going underneath, it lets you pay attention to the voice, and then your brain grabs on to the quiet in the background, and you're locked in.
Mm-hmm.
You are absolutely locked in. And then I found out 4 years later that the whole theory was bullshit and didn't work. And I'm like, I've been seriously editing this in for 4 fucking years. It's like 200 episodes.
That's very funny.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you wasted all that effort on a theory that turned out to be just complete horseshit, but that is very funny.
Yeah. No, it works for me though. I've gone back and listened to some of those older episodes and I do find them more soothing, even though The Left Show at that time was pretty much fucking chaos on wheels. Okay. Well, dude, I have anything else? What do we got? Kirk strategy, cleverness, experience, and I'm too old for this shit. Con strategy, vibes, abs, and yelling Kirk like it's cardio.
I loved Khan's costume design. I loved it. I loved it so much.
Did you know that was his real fucking chest?
Oh, I believe that.
Isn't that nuts?
Yeah, that is insane.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, the effort he had to put forward to keep the ABC network afloat for their few years over there on Fantasy Island.
Oh, yeah.
That was the show. I don't know if you ever watched one of those old shows. They're ridiculous. They are so problematic and misogynistic and gross and fascinating because everybody fucking watched it when I was a kid. It was nuts.
No, I've never watched any of those.
Okay. All right. You know what? Everything else in here is just me being silly, taking an edible at 3 o'clock in the morning and getting up and writing an analysis. It's cracking me up. I'm saving them. I'm going to put them in a book. You know, smart ass things I say about movies. So let's take a little break. And when we get back on the other side, you have a treat that I would like to complain about.
Okay.
Okay.
In a world where MAGA is banning and burning books, it is a revolutionary act to read. It's Monday in America is a bold collection from the left show's J.M. Bell about politics, family, aging, and the uncomfortable truths we keep avoiding. No talking points, just real life and a divided country. Order your copy of It's Monday in America today for just $14.99 at MondayInAmerica.com. If you're looking to feel hopeful or inspired, or if you're just frustrated and unsure about where we're headed, this book provides a unique look at the life of a Gen X liberal, the challenges and victories, and the question, what kind of world have we built for our children? It's Monday in America. $14.99 at MondayInAmerica.com. It's Monday in America. Better to die on your feet than live on your knees.
What if there was one place where comic book fans could get everything? News, reviews, debates, and deep dives every single week.
And not just we read one issue and Googled the rest kind of takes. We're talking 15 years deep, over 600 episodes.
That's right. The world's greatest comic book podcast has been breaking down Marvel, DC, indie books, movies, and fandom culture long before it was cool.
Whether you're a lifelong collector,
a casual fan who just saw the latest superhero movie,
or someone trying to figure out where to even start,
we have got you covered.
We don't always agree, which makes it way more fun.
Yeah, way more fun.
New episodes every Tuesday.
Real opinions, real conversations.
Zero gatekeeping.
Check out the world's greatest comic book podcast at thecomicbookpodcast.com.
Hey kids, comics!
Hey folks, Jeff here. So, you want to start a podcast? Maybe you already did and it's just not going the way you thought it would. Well, here's the truth. It's not about the mic, it's not about the software, and it's definitely not just about posting episodes. It's about building a show that people care about. That's why I created the Defenestrate Media Podcast Academy. It isn't theory and it isn't fluff. It's a step-by-step breakdown of what actually works. Choosing a name, choosing a topic, building your structure, growing an audience, trying to turn your podcast into a brand, and maybe even a business. If you're serious about podcasting, this is a good place to start. And if you're just tired of guessing, this is how you stop. Check out the Defenestrate Media Podcast Academy and build something worth listening to. You could find more information at theleftshow.com. Welcome back. I'm going to turn the time over to Brother Braxton. He can guide us in our spiritual absolutions for the next portion of this particular podcast.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to go back to November of 2004. George W. Bush is reelected as president of the United States.
I remember that.
Defeating Democratic candidate John Kerry.
Yeah, I remember that.
The assault on Fallujah took place on November 8th. U.S. forces launched an all-out offensive in Fallujah, Iraq, to take back control from insurgents.
I remember that.
Later that month, Iran agreed to suspend its nuclear or uranium enrichment program following negotiations with European officials. So I'm glad we get to do that all over again next presidential cycle.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Let's see. Ukraine election protests. 2004 Ukrainian president election results triggered mass protests dubbed the Orange Revolution over alleged corruption and fraud.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then right in the middle of the month, November 16th, prolific video game company Valve released Half-Life 2.
I remember yeah, the day that dropped.
It was a huge deal because Half-Life revolutionized video games in more ways than I think people realize.
Yeah.
Because it was the first time that anyone had ever tried an unbroken first-person narrative. So no cutscenes, nothing. You go from one mission to another mission with just some loading screens in between. And I mean, if you play Half-Life on modern hardware, it is basically unbroken.
Yeah.
And it told a story, and a really cool one, about a science experiment gone wrong that caused a resonance cascade that opened a portal to a place called Zen that let in all these monsters. And it introduced the world to now incredibly notable video game protagonist, Gordon Freeman.
Gordon! Dr. Freeman!
Yep, Dr. Freeman. So Half-Life happens. Gordon goes into Zen, shuts the portal. He gets confronted by the G-Man, who offers a job to Gordon. If you say no in that game, fun fact, you can kind of walk away from him, and he'll send you to Zen with no weapons and leave you there to die.
Huh.
But after that, if you agree, Gordon is put into stasis for 20 years. And that's where Half-Life 2 picks up, is 20 years later. Gordon is pulled out of stasis because the world has been taken under the control of the Combine Empire. Fun fact.
Subtle.
Yeah. Fun fact, the war where the Combine took control is called the 7 Hours War, because it only took 7 hours for them to take the entire planet.
All right. That's spooky.
This game is probably my number one video game of all time, because it is the very first game that I remember playing start to finish, and it's what sparked a love of video games my entire life.
Okay.
Because when I played this, I must have been, I don't remember exactly how old I was, I must have been like 9 or 10. And so I had kind of played video games here and there. Like, I had played like Medal of Honor with my dad.
Sure.
I had snuck into my dad's PS2 games and played Dead to Rights when he wasn't home.
Good, good.
I'd played like Crash Bandicoot, but I had never played something like this on my own. And it was that moment for me of like, holy shit, you can do this in video games? You can just tell a story like this. And so this game is what I would absolutely credit as the most important game to me.
Okay. No, that's good. I have notes.
I would love to hear them.
This fucking boat.
Oh, the Borealis.
Yeah, you're like, hey, you've played it before. You don't even need to install it. You're not going to waste any time. And I was like, God damn it. And so it's in the library.
Mm-hmm.
So I installed it and started playing, and I have been driving. It feels like this little airboat.
Oh no, not the Borealis. Yeah, that's
I'm at the beginning.
That's levels 3 and 4. That's water, root canal, and water hazard.
Yeah. Yeah, I am sick to shit of this boat.
Yeah.
It steers like an idiot.
Oh, the boat is bad. It's because this was Valve's like flagship game at the time, because they had just finished their next iteration of the Source engine, which was massively successful and is still used to this day.
Yeah.
But this was the first time that an actual physics engine had been developed for a game. And so they put that shit on everything.
Yeah, they did.
Including the boat and the car in Half-Life 2 Episode 1.
Yep.
And Half-Life 2 Episode 2.
Yeah, I remember those. And I remember them being difficult to drive. Any of the vehicles in Half-Life 2 just drove me up a goddamn tree.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, when that idiot with the bad throwaway line threw me my crowbar,
oh, I felt complete. Barney.
I was like,
about that
back.
Beer I owe you.
Yeah, but I mean, seriously, yeah. It was just like, fuck yeah, Gordon Freeman's back. Let's go squash some of these head zombies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in again, the one thing I hate in this game are those weird fucking tongue things that hang from the ceiling
and the
pull
barnacles.
You out of the boat and really fuck up your health.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the barnacles are rough. I always just end up, every time I just find the nearest barrel and throw it at it and just run underneath it. Like, I don't even bother killing them anymore.
I do when I touch them, and I constantly fuck up and touch them. Mm-hmm. It's, I mean, you go back. I mean, I was playing at the time. I was playing, I mean, this is what? What did you say, 2004?
Yeah, 2004.
I was playing Unreal Tournament, mm-hmm. 2004 at the time. That was the physics I was used to. But I kept turning that off, even though I swear to God this is true. I was in a competitive clan.
That's awesome.
In Unreal Tournament.
That's so awesome.
And we would hook up every, what, Tuesday, Wednesday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and would you know, we'd all meet via email, and then we'd all jump a server at the same time and start just mm-hmm. playing other clans all over the place all day long. It drove my ex-wife fucking nuts those days. But I was very serious about it, which is also fucking nuts, looking back at how serious I took that. I had a bumper sticker on my car with my clan crest. That's how seriously we took it.
So awesome. There are definitely some games like that. Like when Marvel Rivals first came out for like the first like 3 months, I took that game seriously. And now I play it casually with my friends. I don't do competitive anymore because I like enjoying playing the game.
Why when I bought Dark Souls 3, mm-hmm. I had instant regret.
Oh, yeah?
It was amazing. And mm-hmm. and it took me about 2 weeks to get to that first monster guy, the first level boss. Mm-hmm. And I spent 2 days fighting him. And at one point, I had him down to just a sliver, and I also had a sliver, and he caught me. And I was like, fuck this game. I am done. I have been doing this for 6 weeks. I still haven't beat level one yet.
Yeah, it's Dark Souls is the... I don't get mad at video games. I just don't, even in competitive online.
Yeah.
I just... just start to like resent playing the game.
Yeah.
But Dark Souls, the first Dark Souls game, was the only time I ever like threw a controller. It was when I was fighting like Ornstein and Smo. It was probably like my fifth or sixth time fighting it. And I just got like locked into a combo I had no way of blocking that was just unfair. And so I think I gave up. I didn't play that game again for like 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah. It was. For those of that, you know, have listened for a while, who know our buddy, Bob 616, we were talking, I was talking about how frustrated I was with this game and how it was driving me nuts. And I got a private message from him the next day. And he's like, are you by any chance playing that with keyboard and mouse? And I'm like, of course I am. PC Master Race, babe. And he's like,
Prepare to Die Edition was Dark Souls 1. Cause there was a petition to port it to PC.
So this was Dark Souls 3, and so he sent me an Xbox controller with a USB plug-in. Mm-hmm. He's like, you cannot play that game on mouse and keyboard, and he's a mouse and keyboard master. And he's mm-hmm. like, yeah, that's fucking stupid, don't do that, here's a controller, go do this. And I still couldn't beat that first level. I still haven't to this day. Every once in a while I put it on and some of those wraiths get me and I'm like, yeah, I remember. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm too old for this game.
There's one mission in particular in Half-Life 2 that I want to talk about.
Okay.
And that is chapter 6, We Don't Go to Ravenholm. That was the first mission in a game that I legitimately like scared the hell out of me.
Oh,
like it was just so ambient. And they, you know, looking back and playing it, because I'll play Half-Life 2. I'll play all the Half-Life games at least once a year.
Oh, okay.
I'll just sit down. I've played them so many times. I'll just sit down and I'll do it over the course of like 2 days.
Soothing.
Yeah.
Cathartic.
No, it's just fun. It's just mindless for me. But every time I get to Ravenholm, I still get that little like twinge of like, okay, here we go. Because the poison head crabs can go fuck themselves for real.
Yeah.
Like, down to one HP off one hit, are you shitting me? Especially the poison head crab zombies that just throw them at you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I am, like I said, I am several levels behind this, and I'm already frustrated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... But this was also my first memory of, because even though it scared me, being, like, fascinated by it. And that was also what sparked a lifelong love of horror media.
Ah.
We Don't Go to Ravenholm. And I remember I got so into this game, I would sit for hours and read the Half-Life wiki and read the, like, Easter eggs and tricks and secrets. And I remember hearing for the first time the reversed audio from the zombies when you can hear the dude screaming for help.
Uh-huh.
And that fucked me up for a little bit. That, like, I would, like, hear that as I was going to sleep.
Yeah.
It would mess with me that much.
I've had Resident Evil. The first one, PlayStation 1. First game that ever scared the shit out of me. Especially with jump scares. Oh my god, that game was master of the jump scare.
Oh yeah, those, like, the first time you see the zombie or the dogs in the hallway always got me when they jump through the window.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I do remember going back and playing that years later and was like, Jesus Christ, I took this seriously? This is awful.
At the time playing it for the first time when you went to Ravenholm, it was like, I was like, oh, this is masterful writing. They've set this up so well. But, like, the setup is them walking past the hallway and going, that's Ravenholm. We don't go there. And then they walk away and you go and meet, I think that's when you meet Dog for the first time. And I love Dog.
Okay.
Dog is so cool. He's such a cool robot design. Just everything about this game is just fun for me. Especially, like, the gravity gun, like, cutting zombies in half with saw blades.
Yeah.
With the gravity gun is always a highlight.
I have had a really hard time playing video games the last few months. I have a thing where when things are going shitty in my life, I like to pile on more shitty instead of do something that makes me happy. And if I, like, especially during unemployment times, which seems to be the perfect time to play video games, I can't let myself do it. I'm like, if you've got time to look for work, you've got time to look for work. Mm-hmm. And so I spend all of my time on fucking, you know, Indeed and the other sites right now. And it was fun to install this game. And it was, I did it when we did BioShock, and it was like, oh yeah, I remember this. This was entertaining. I enjoyed it. Happy. And then plugging in Half-Life 2 and getting my crowbar, you know, and remembering just how ridiculous the physics were on shooting a handgun from 200 yards.
Yeah.
You know, bam, 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 with a 9mm. Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. It did. It was a muscle memory that reminded me of a time that I was happy and I was playing it, and I ended up very happily playing the game, you know, for a couple of hours. And it's like, I you know, luckily, to make it work, you know, Tiffany was feeling okay that night. She'd only had seizures in the morning. And so I was just kind of, you know, babe, let me know if you start feeling weird or anything, like, you know, I'm right here. I'm right here. Mm-hmm. She's like, will you just go? And I did. And I sat down and I played a video game for a couple of hours, and it was so goddamn nice. And it's intuitive. I don't have to rethink any place on the keyboard my hand goes. I don't have to think about it. It is, it plays exactly the way it's supposed to play, you know?
Yeah, to a point where it just feels natural. Like, and it's one of those things that I'm so grateful there is like standardization for across the industry. Because I can't do arrow keys, WASD forever and always.
See, I can't do gamepads. I can't do console controllers.
Oh, that's fair. I think it's, because I grew up playing almost exclusively consoles. Like, we didn't have a PC that could run games until I was probably like 9 or 10.
Yeah.
That was just all I knew was consoles.
Yeah. Yeah. My first, there was something called the Odyssey game system that was an Atari ripoff that my parents bought when I was a kid. Okay. So,
I'm familiar with it.
Yeah. Just, fucking Pong, shit like that. Mm-hmm. I remember the kids across the street got, it was the Indiana Jonesy game with the alligators. I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, they had the Ataris and the Commodores and we had the Odyssey game system. And so that was my first console. My second console was a PlayStation 1. I got after I finally got my insurance money back, from breaking my neck when that drunk driver hit me. The first thing I bought literally was satellite TV and a PlayStation 1.
Living large.
Yep. I wanted to watch South Park.
The only way
to get South Park at the time was on fucking satellite.
So valid.
Yeah. Nuts. That was back right then when Princess Diana died. And my favorite cable news station, which was the very young MSNBC, was wall-to-wall Princess Di. I mean, it was the dead celebrity news network. It was fucking nuts. I've gone off on another weird tangent. I apologize.
No, you're all right. I think that's pretty much all I have to say about Half-Life. I mean, I could gush over it for hours, but like,
no, it's a great game. It's just a wonderful game.
I still know the, like, almost by heart, the entire opening monologue that G-Man gives.
Nice.
Yeah, the wake up, Mr. Freeman, wake up and smell the ashes.
It's good.
It's such an important game to me. It basically shaped my interests for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's nuts, huh?
Yeah, and so, shout out to my dad for also being into Half-Life and letting me play Half-Life 2. And I remember when I finished Half-Life 2 Episode 2, I turned to him and said, "When's the third one coming out?"
Oh!
And he had to explain to me that the third one had been about to come out for years at that point.
Yeah.
And it probably wouldn't come out. And so that was my first experience with Heartbreak.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I do. We're still waiting for Half-Life 3.
Someday.
Maybe if this gaming platform purchase store thing they've got going finally gets its feet off the ground, they can get back to programming me a video game.
This multi-billion-dollar storefront.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's, well, they're making a game. They're making, this little Shopify. Have you heard about Deadlock?
No.
Oh, it's their like hero shooter. It's kind of like a MOBA, like Smite.
Okay.
You pick a hero, that you go up a lane, fight the enemy's like boss. It's in like, you can't access it through the storefront. You have to be invited to a playtest. When I got invited to the playtest.
That sounds cool. I once got invited to Gmail before any of my friends.
I can send you an invite. I'll send you an invite.
Okay. Yeah. Gmail was invite only at the beginning.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah, that was hard to get.
But yeah, now that I have a nicer computer now, so now I can finally get PC VR to run Half-Life Alyx.
Okay.
And I will finally dig my Oculus, or I'm calling it Oculus Quest 2. Meta can go fuck itself.
All right, well, why don't we call that a show, and then what we're going to do is go over and do a little Patreon content. Every week that we record, we do a little Patreon content. Something special for the folks that pitch in and help us pay the bills around here. You can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/defenmedia. That's D-E-F-E-N media. And that's where the good stuff is. That's where we get a little bit more unstructured. Not that you would call this show structured yet.
I would, yeah.
But I swear to you, it gets even more unstructured. It's yeah, good. It's a good time.
Thank you for tuning in to listen to two friends talk.
Yeah, absolutely. This is why I do this. This makes me happy. All right, buddy. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, folks. Thanks for listening. We will see you next week.
Did you like the show? Join JM and Braxton on Patreon. Patreon.com/defendmedia. Each week they record, they upload additional content exclusively for the Patreon family. Patreon.com/defendmedia.